I think this is not a coincidence. It's a message to the Palestinians, to the people who stand with them in Umm El Khair, that despite the tragedy, the settlers and the state are continuing the effort to push the people out. And, you know, even burying him, a very simple thing, the Israeli army is preventing him to be buried in his hometown, in his village. They want him to be buried in a nearby town, despite the fact his family obviously wants to bury him in the place he lived all his life, and he was active there. His friends and colleague told me, and I also knew him personally, that he was the most peaceful man. Every time I came there, I would see him. He'd always host and greet people and make tours there. He was in contact with the media. He was updating me weekly on the harassment, on the campaign of the settlers and the army to force them to leave. And it's a tragedy that it's hard to imagine. You know, Umm El Khair will not be the same without him.
Oren Zeev, I want to thank you for being with us. We'll continue to follow this and follow the funeral when it takes place. Again, family members have been taken of Alda, but the man who is responsible for his death has been released under house arrest. Oren Zeev, reporter and photographer for 972 Magazine, will link to your new piece about Alda, headlined "The Most Peaceful Person." I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Portland.
I'm out to sing songs that will prove to you that this is your world, and that if it's hit you pretty hard and knocked you down for a dozen loops, no matter how hard it's run you down and rolled over you, no matter what color, what size you are, how you're built, I am out to sing the songs that will make you take pride in yourself.
I'm Lori Sonnenfeld.
And I'm Don Jacobson.
Together we bring you Movin' On, Fridays from 12 noon to 1:30.
We feature both traditional and contemporary folk music.
We love to present live in-studio concerts from local and national musicians.
Tune in and you'll hear music that is socially progressive, moving, and heartfelt.
Music heard only on the left-hand edge of the dial and only on KBOO.
Every Friday, noon to 1:30.
We who believe in freedom cannot fail.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8 a.m. Next up is PDX Progressive Talk Radio.
You list the things to do. You got a list of all your wishes. That's a wish list, dude. You got your Amazon and Santa Claus and Tooth Fairy too. But I know a list that don't exist, and buddy, so do you. It's the Epstein list. It's a mystery list with a twist. It's a myth of a list that we all just missed. Be an optimist, not a pessimist. If you wish to persist, you probably ought to forget that list. What were we talking about? I don't remember, but I can sleep a lot better at night. Yeah, life can just go along, knowing there's 10,000 hours of sunshine and flowers and nobody doing a damn thing wrong. Here, no C, no damn Bongino, Cash Patel. Well, I wouldn't want to be a sweating man with bulging eyes. Now tell me them fellas ain't compromised. Do, 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 any implicated dude.
Good morning, Portland and beyond. You know, that is Jesse Wells, and he is going to be in Eugene in August. I don't remember the date offhand, but he had a TikTok on saying all of the places that he's going to be, and he's going to actually be in the area. And so he was here, and I missed it or something, but he was in the Northwest. I originally was using protest songs because I am out of time and haven't actually done an actual intro for the show, but I'm liking it. This is probably the fourth or fifth show I've done a protest song at the beginning, and it just always sets it off. So I want to thank everybody for listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio this morning, or every other Wednesday, and having us as part of your waking up routine. If you're listening live, it's July 30th, 2025. Oh my goodness, It's almost August. Christmas is right around the corner. Can you believe it? We're almost to 2026. We are so happy to be able to bring information to you here at KBOO, and keep your ears open. We are going to have another membership drive at the end of the month. So we're always working to keep the doors open and those lights on. A lot has happened and continues to happen around the Northwest with ice and the things in Washington, D.C. that are coming down the pike. And I will be talking about those at another time. Today, I am honored to have a couple of friends here to interview. Please help me, my KBOO family, welcome Remy and Adam to the show. They are local residents who enjoy being community advocates for Milwaukee's livability and sustainable spaces. Remy and Adam, thank you for being my guests. Can you tell us about yourselves and your new project coming up?
Oh, well, let's go ahead and let Adam start, because Adam has a very better resume than I would when it comes to public service. And by the way, I'm Rod. Remy is to my friends, so please, Portland, call me Remy. But I want you to go ahead and talk to Adam to start this off, because he is one of my closest friends and advocates towards a progressive future. Please.
Thanks, Remy. I appreciate that. You flatter me, though, quite a bit.
He's better looking than I am, too, so let's just underline that twice.
That's the best part about radio, right?
Exactly. No one can confirm or deny.
As my friend was saying here, we both of us are community activists and community leaders, and me currently, I currently do serve on the Milwaukee City Council. Was originally appointed in June of 22, won the election that year to fill the remainder of another council member seat. And then just last November, won my first full four-year term.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's campaigning sucks. It's tough. The best part about it is talking to the people. The worst part about it is asking for money.
I hear that often.
Yeah, especially here. I mean, you know, who really has extra money to give these days?
Right.
And then I'll let Remy introduce himself. Obviously, he's been involved in our community as well, and that's really how we met.
Yeah, okay, my name is Rod Smith, but Remy is what I go by to my close personal friends, and I want to make 1,000 new ones every day, and this is an opportunity to do so. I'm a father of 3 small, lovely children who causes me nothing but havoc each and every morning, a beautiful wife who destroys my soul and brings it back together nightly when we have conversations. She is a fantastic human being that makes my life so much better than it should be. I truly be honest on that. We came originally from Oklahoma, Louisiana, Texas area, but we were washed out by Katrina and decided to relocate up here to the great state of Oregon, because my native people actually come from here. We were, finger quotations, displaced by land grab of 1848, if it helps.
The gold rush.
So we moved back up here to repopulate this area with my little offspring, in hopes that we can add a little new amount of native color back to the landscape, if you will. but I have been helping advocate for a lot of interest that goes on in Milwaukee and Portland as a whole. So I can talk forever. Please move on, or I'll just chew on people's ales.
So I met Remy or Rodney through a group on Facebook, because I'm turning PDX Progressive Talk Radio on the other side, on the social side, into the Progressive Progressive Radio Podcast is the name of it. And he has been super helpful in kind of giving me some ideas about how to really reach the community as it sits in front of us, right? So talk more about local issues and less on the radio and less about national So I will be doing a lot more national stuff on the podcast, but this will always be very local. And these gentlemen, Remy introduced me to Adam, and they have an idea, and we're working on pushing that through, encouraging it for a podcast. So what I want to do is ask either one of you who want to answer this, what made you decide it was time to launch a podcast, and why is this podcast for the moment?
Either one of us was probably, I mean, honestly, I think anybody could answer that question about why now.
We haven't said the title of the podcast yet.
That's
so
a good point. I mean, being in politics is pretty interesting. And when I say in politics, like the closest I've been to working for the government outside of an elected official was serving in our nation's military. Other than that, I'm just a, you know, average guy. Go through my up and downs just like anybody else. But what I started realizing, even as I am in politics, once I got into politics too, is that, you know, we talk about a representative government, but right now our times are showing that it's only representing the fringes of each side currently, right? There's only certain groups that truly feel represented in our government right now.
Or don't, right? Yes. Right.
There's more people that don't feel represented, because you have two factions basically, and if you don't align or if you don't identify in either of those factions, you really don't have a place to go. And I think that's the opposite of what our political system was intended for. The start of this was no taxation without representation, right?
That's what I live by every single day. Right, and that's exactly my argument most of the time. I am not being represented by my government that I pay for.
Jump in here. When Adam speaks about the fringes, let's be honest here. One fringe is on fire, and the other fringe is struggling to make sense of the dynamic as everything changes around them.
Struggling to deliver.
Yeah, because they still want to be very progressive. They want to help people. They want to, you know, form a culture that is representative of everyone around. Right. Right. And how do you battle Goliath at the same time you want to save the children? It is nearly impossible, because there is a missing middle that is not being represented, and they could be a great ally to the side of sanity, if I may.
You're 100% right. If you look at the demographics, it's really the people in the middle that swing elections in the first place.
Yes.
It's if you broke the country into thirds, there's a third on the right, there's a third on the left, and there's a third in the middle. It's probably bigger in the middle, because there's a lot of people that are non-affiliated as well.
Right.
But the process doesn't favor those people.
Right.
Unfortunately. Right. So that's the idea, is to really give the people that aren't being heard or don't feel represented a voice, and hopefully bring people back to some common sense.
So that would go to the next question. They gave away the plot here. The podcast is going to be called The Missing Middle. And so what does that phrase mean to you personally and politically? Whoever wants to answer.
I'll start this one. Adam's taken his lumps, as it were, to start this off. But The Missing Middle is excuse me, a bug. I swallowed one. That's okay. It's protein. The joke about it is that we have a missing middle that doesn't have representation in our government for whatever reason. Is it complacency? I don't think so. Is it the fact that they don't have someone who wants to stand up for them? I don't know. It's confusing to find that we have so many individuals who want to be part of our government and have a say, but they were being drowned out by the loudest voices in the room. And the fact of the matter is, we have these people who are very good-natured, who wants to be part of the group, but they feel like they're being pushed out by either side. Well, let's be honest, one side more than the other.
Right.
But we have to figure out a way to connect those missing middle to an agenda that represents and reflects our city, our state, our country, And you mean you can get a lot of the right side voices that just scream at you and tell you you're this or that, but we are trying to do something that makes representation heal. I mean, I can go on and on, but I don't want to just drown you in minutia here, but...
Let me interrupt just for a moment, because this has been just burning at me. Mm-hmm. I'm on TikTok a lot, and there's several Oregon-based creators, and one of them was saying how, and I have not been a fan of his in a little while, but one was saying how a certain representative of ours at the federal level was being such an advocate for the people of Oregon by initiating a debate over the Epstein financials.
Mm-hmm.
How does that help? Oh, and keeping unidentifiable ICE people from kidnapping our citizens off the streets. Now, that part I really didn't have a ton of. My only argument with that as a radio host and as a progressive is he is not working to get ICE taken out of Portland.
No.
One. And two, as I move through the city, Epstein's financials are not even in the realm of thought. No cause eviction, lack of jobs, lack of affordable housing. He is not doing anything to move initiatives at the federal level that will help us in Oregon. So I need people to really, really understand that there's a difference between taxation for representation in your community and seeing that at the federal level, and then just paying somebody to support actions of the Democrats at the federal level.
Well,
that is not helping us. The Epstein's financials, who cares?
Oh, it's salacious. That's what it is. It gets butts in the chair, if I may. But in the end, it doesn't represent who we are, what we want. I mean, I'm as curious as the next guy, but we all know what happens when we see a car wreck. We rubberneck, right?
Well, I don't care.
This is a countrywide rubbernecking, and it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be our main focus. You're correct when we have so many other things going on, and we're staring at the most egregious thing possible. It's a distraction.
The most egregious thing possible is there are 650,000 homeless people.
Absolutely.
In the United States, a good 6,000 of them in the Portland area. And apparently, do you guys mind hanging on just for a minute?
Sure.
We have a phone call.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay, well, I wasn't ready to open. Go ahead and put him through. Hi, Santiago.
Good morning.
Hi, I wasn't ready to take phone calls yet.
That's fine. You don't have to take them yet. I was just hanging on, letting y'all talk. You guys are good. If you want to put me back on hold and finish your
No, talk, you're fine. What's going on?
Yeah,
what's
going on?
Yeah, okay. All right. So, you know, the third way, this missing middle to me, I mean, I think when it comes to, like, the missing middle, I don't think there's so much as a middle, so much as there is just a disconnect, because a lot of the people understand that there is a clear difference between the desires of the people and the desires of the people who represent them. And
absolutely.
Due to the history of anti-communism in this country, that is really what drove progressive values. In fact, progressives are what socialists renamed themselves during the, you know, after the Red Scare witch hunts, so they could still supposedly perform their jobs while, you know, advocating for socialist values. But the point is that these Epstein files are essentially a stand-in or a very rudimentary or very immature version of class warfare. Because the people understand that that people have money and they're allowed to do whatever they want. And
how is that helping us?
It isn't in a way, because it's false class warfare, because it's like it's like arguing over like the aliens or something, something that's not like physically provable. But if we actually had education that the socialists and the communists parties provided, which is a material analysis of what is going on, how all of these politicians are bought and paid for in the highest leadership by billionaires to not be able to move any sort of progressive policy, and people would actually rally against that. I feel like there would be a lot more movement on the ground. But the problem is that people, one of the problems is that if we're going to fight for the 99% against the 1%, then we have to lose any sort of notion that they are in the same boat as us. And I think, and a lot of what these guys promote, whether you're talking about Republicans or Democrats, is they talk about America and this feeling of America and the myth of America. And a lot of people, especially black and brown folks, we've become much more conscious of the fact that this place was not built for us. So if we're going to talk about how we fix this place, fix the land that we live on, it's understanding that, you know, while Democrats may somewhat decry the genocide in Palestine and actually correctly calling it a settler colonial nation, and for the handful of them who do not believe that Israel has a right to exist, we have to understand that America falls in that same boat, that it's built on the same level of genocide and and thievery and expropriation of profits and land, and get people to advocate for the fact that we need to look outside of, you know, just being an American, because being an American hasn't helped the majority of people. It's a nice feel-good label, but it doesn't actually provide material benefits, namely my ancestors. My ancestors are in barrios, they're in reses, they are languishing, they are dying, despite whatever federal recognition that they have. Black folks were warehoused in ghettos for the same reason. You know, they don't want us to, you know, our status is a paper citizen.
Hey, Santiago, you know? Santiago, I'm in the middle of an interview here, so as much as I appreciate your voice and your willingness to communicate where you stand, I have to let you go.
Okay, so I'm just saying, you know.
Thank you, Santiago.
Do you mind if I respond to Santiago?
Yeah, yeah.
Santiago, bless you, brother. I understand where you're coming from, and we may disagree on certain points of your speech, but you are the missing middle. You're the one of the voices that we need to have talking to us. So often we blink you out because they don't seem to understand the value of what you say. Even if I disagree with some of what you say, I don't disagree with you 100% across the board. The fact that you don't have a voice crushes me. And the fact that you called in today, I thank you. I mean, this is the exact thing we're looking for. The individual who wants to have something to say. And even if we don't 100% agree, we can find common ground to move forward. So yes, you're talking to a brown brother right now, okay? And I totally understand you on this. But please, let's move on to ours. Thank you, Santiago.
Thank you, Remy, for the explanation. So Santiago brought up some very valid issues, and that's in the next question of what is happening in our city that makes the middle feel quote unquote missing. Can you name an issue where it feels like the center isn't being invited to the conversation?
Yes, actually, and I'd like to say thank you to Santiago too. He made some very, very valid points. I would say we just had a town hall about housing.
Oh, we did.
So I would say housing is one of them. Housing is, you know, what the state at the state level, and then this is all my opinion on how I feel about the issue, but as somebody who, you know, was homeless at a point, struggled to you know, buy a home, and really the only reason I was able to get one was because the VA loan.
Right.
You know, if I didn't have the VA loan, I who's going to save that much? Who has the ability to save that much money for a down payment, right? A VA loan, you don't have a down payment. So
Adam is a vet. So
yes,
thank you, a combat vet, if I may.
Served in Iraq in the United States Marine Corps. But yeah, we had a we had a town hall that brought people from all over our community to discuss the middle housing bills that the state had put in place. There was a common theme. Like, you had people from different socioeconomic statuses, you know, you had renters, you had homeowners, but the theme was pretty singular, and it was that overreach by the state, right?
Overreach.
In what fashion?
Well, in the fact that, so a city like ours, like Milwaukee, we were a step ahead of the state in what we did in our codes and our zonings and changing things. And then the state felt the need to have a statewide zoning, right? So what they did is they created a blanket policy that every city had to follow, regardless of that city's demographics, of that city's socioeconomic status. So it was kind of ironic when it came out, because it, you know, in a state that touts itself for equity and inclusion, this was probably the most inequitable and exclusive legislation, because you did a blanket policy that forced cities, no matter what they've already done to ease the housing market and to help lower prices on housing, the state just said, too bad, this is what we're doing now.
Wow.
No collaboration.
Well,
that's incredible.
If I may make a slight joke here, as a Native American, we don't like people that when the state gives us blankets.
Yes.
And, and it causes a little bit of distress, because each and every community is unique in its needs and its requirements. And the fact of the matter is, you can't take a giant paintbrush and splash it across the country, all country,
yeah,
like Oregon, I mean,
yeah,
and expect it to fit every need.
Yeah, and I always thought that was the issue. Like, I remember at a time when government was like, you can't just, there isn't just one size fits all.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That was the
yeah.
whole argument, and here we are doing one size fits
one
all.
One size fits all.
And the worst part about it is, you know, yeah, we have a housing crisis, but I think they're missing one term in there. We have a housing affordability crisis.
Mm.
Right.
Like, just because you build a bunch of houses at market rate doesn't mean people can afford them. So
exactly. So
that's a cancerous word you just said, at market rate.
Yes.
And the fact is, there's no way it's no ways it goes down. The market rate continues to stack upon itself until it's like, well, $3,000 for a single bedroom, that's a steal. No, it's not.
Or you're in a position like we are now.
Yes.
Where you have high interest rates.
Yep.
So
housing costs.
Right. And people can't buy, and then you have sellers who can't get what they're asking for. So now they're pulling their houses off the market. So when you get to an impasse like this, what do you do? How does this bill help? Because this bill really gave it kind of opened the gates for developers to develop more stuff that they're going to profit off of.
Right.
Not develop more stuff that Oregonians need right now. So
and as fast as possible as well. And with I know this is something Adam and I spoke about last night, and we and our wives were screaming, get off the phone, you guys are acting like teenagers. But in which way, we were having a conversation that a lot of these new constructions are done so fast that the inspectors who are coming behind them need to have more opportunities to see what they've done. I mean, I was telling him, I won't say the name of the place because I don't want to be killed. but it was the paint is peeling off the wall. It seems the foundation is separating, and they spent millions to build it.
Oh my!
And we would love for I would love to have a chance to walk through there and see if I'm just delusional, or construction is questionable at best.
Right. So, and that's something that I've been concerned about for decades, as condos and apartments and all of these places are going up snap, right? It used to, when I was a kid, I remember it taking forever for a place to get built, like a good 3 or 4 months at minimum for a place to get built. It took forever, and now they're up in like, 60 days, maybe. And that's trying to alleviate or take out any of the developer permit issues, costs and stuff to quote unquote lower the cost of housing. Well, if you're taking out the regulatory fees, they aren't addressing those things.
Yeah, well, I mean, the answer is always more like, let's give more incentive money. And I get it, like the carrot and the stick method, right?
Right.
But what do you do when the horse just eats the carrot?
Yeah.
Right?
Like, and you put the stick away.
Reaganomics.
Because, yeah. I mean, you don't even got the stick out anymore. They literally know the stick doesn't exist. So they don't feel the stick.
Yeah, they don't care.
Well, yeah, it's pretty, I mean, you know, we're giving more money to the same group of individuals that perpetuated the crisis in the first place.
Thank you for saying that out loud.
Yeah.
To me, it just doesn't make sense, right? Like, why didn't we set aside funds for local developers?
Right.
You know, for smaller developers. Why didn't we set aside funds for nonprofits and specifically who aren't out there? The whole point of it is nonprofit, right?
Right.
Like, if you give money to somebody who's
Habitat for Humanity.
Right. Organizations like that, as opposed to people who, like, you're basically hoping that the consciousness of the developer comes out and their Jiminy Cricket shines and says, hey, do the right thing.
And it's just not
going
to
happen. Don't look out for your profit, right? Yeah. But they're always going to look out for their profit. I mean,
the shareholders. So have you seen moments where extreme voices on either side have shut down real progress? I have.
Oh, yeah.
And what does that look like?
We're living it right now.
The
national level.
Adam usually has to talk me off the ledge from, you know, putting a Rambo bandana on and running into the city council going, you're insane. You know, Adam is a voice of reason when it comes to this. And honestly, when it comes to this, we are facing such insanities. We have the ICE. The ICE has literally been given $200 billion to continue the war on the people.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, I'm saying this without hyperbole. You're going to have riots in the streets and you're going to have deaths because of these individuals feeling like they're untouchable because you can't ID them. Then there's even studies done about people who wear masks, allowing them to do more egregious things because they have some sort of shell around themselves thinking, no one can see who I am. No, I can do the darkest things in my personality.
Yeah.
And there's no accountability. I mean, we know what happened during Portland, a few years ago?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where the individuals wore masks, beat people in the streets. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And those things are still trying to be prosecuted against those individuals. And they're never going to come about.
Right, right. So do you think political polarization in Portland is worse than it was 10 years ago?
I do, yeah. I mean, not just Portland. I think everywhere.
I actually have seen people kind of come closer together. We still have our extremes, but I see more of a center filtering up and people actually helping each other.
I hope so. I mean, I guess I don't feel it just because of, you know, everything in the media is something divisive.
Yeah.
Right? Like the news or an article comes out, there's always something that's divisive. So, at least in my community, I feel like it's better. I didn't feel like Milwaukee really had a divisiveness to it. I know people don't agree, but it never felt combative. Right? Like it never felt.
No.
Like I know when I was in high school and I hung out in Milwaukee, it wasn't like that.
No, yeah. There's a lot of complacency in the beginning that happened in Milwaukee. People felt. And complacency is all fine. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I love to be complacent. I love to not to worry that someone's going to break my door down.
Right.
I like to not to worry that there's going to be a heavy crime going on outside so I can take my children to the garden and we can pick vegetables. But that complacency has been shattered.
Yep.
We are forcing our children to not look both ways when we cross the street, but look both ways, stare at people, make sure they're safe, make sure they stay in large groups. Do not talk to the police. I mean, that is insane.
Yeah.
Police used to be our number one group. Now, I have to say, Milwaukee's police are amazing. And I will tell you the fact of the matter is our chief, Ryan, right? I can't remember his last name.
Ryan Burdick.
He has went out of his way to engage with the population, no matter what color, what side, what political view, because he realizes those people are someone he's going to have to go to grocery shopping with and his children is going to be playing on the streets with. Mm-hmm. He has done an amazing job, and I hope that I'm not giving him some great, you know, pat on the back and it turns out something bad happens in the future, because this is not that. Today, I would leave my children with him and feel safe to do so.
Are you guys okay with us opening up the phones now?
Yeah, that's
please.
Fine.
So,
Adam, are you okay if you have time?
Yeah, well, we'll go through the interview, but... and then if people call.
Yeah.
So if you want to call and talk to these guys, the podcast is The Missing Middle. And I think it's a fabulous idea. I'm super glad to know these guys, and I'm so happy they chose to come to the interview.
I'm sorry we're late, but there's construction.
You were fine. So 503-231-8187. Again, that's 503-231-8187. Call on in and talk to Remy and Adam about The Missing Middle. Are you part of it? Do you feel like you don't have a voice and you're kind of a centrist, right? So you're not way progressive or way conservative. You're in the middle. I want to hear from you at 503-231-8187. The next question is, have either of you been labeled something you don't identify with, like too progressive, I know, or too conservative? And what did you learn from that?
You know, I've been called worse things than that too, actually.
By me.
by others. And one thing, just to touch on the police department thing, just you know, not all police departments are the same.
No.
So
right.
Whatever is going on with PPB is not what's going to happen in Milwaukee.
No, agreed. I'm just patting Milwaukee.
And that's
on
the thing.
Back.
I appreciate you saying that, because I really do think Milwaukee Police Department is an example. So, but yes, I've been called both those things. I've been looked at probably as too conservative. I've been looked at as not progressive enough. I've also been looked at as too conservative. And you know, it's funny, because nowadays it's like, if you show any inclination of moderacy to either side, you're looked at as the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I don't want to rezone, let's say, our entire landscape to allow a bunch of high-rise buildings, it's like, well, you're not progressive enough to meet the moment. Right. But if I don't, you know, if I'm not willing to get rid of DEI in our city, then it's like, oh, you're a leftist, right? So it's
right.
But I mean,
so I think so. Progressives, as far as I know, and liberals, as far as I know, are not necessarily for the high rises and stuff.
Well,
we
it's
want
the
community
right.
living,
but the idea is the rezoning is getting. We've had an issue with zoning. Zoning has been a huge issue, and some progressives will even go as far as saying we need to get rid of the single family home.
I've heard
Which
that.
I'm
yes.
And oh, really?
That's yeah. No. And that I well, totally understand that. See, the thing is, those individuals who want to get rid of that are like on the fringes, and especially I knew where Adam was going to go with it. Please, Adam, continue. I've just
and that's the thing. It's not all, because there's different levels to progressivism too.
Exactly.
Right?
Where are the lines?
And that's
right?
that's the issue that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because it's like even if you're, because I have progressive ideals. I'm a climate guy. I helped get climate and DEI fully funded as a part of a function of our city.
It's yes, and I have an environmental science degree, so when I talk about this, it's usually I usually go by the environmental ombudsman when I'm online sending my emails and chatting with people.
Yeah.
Because I'm the nerd who loves to look at the math and loves to point out when inconsistencies are being published by state and our city's progressive thought bubbles, and honestly, most of them feel like they don't have the right people on staff to help them see the faults. And I don't want to make enemies here, but usually when we have conversations, it's I bring facts and figures, and I get stared at with glossy eyes, and I'm called a conservative because I dare question the math that what progressives are supposed to put out. And I'm like, no, I'm trying to save you from being faced off with a conservative or someone who has a different thought process, and call your math pseudoscience. Get the science right, get the math right, and stand on solid ground.
Yep, I agree completely. And I think if people had valid, authentic research behind their ideals, that shouldn't be an issue. So what's a belief that you've changed your mind on over time, and why? And I want That's a good question for listeners, too. Have you held... So I always joke that I went from being a centrist. Now, I made the conscious choice to move from conservatism to liberal when I was in my 20s. Hmm. And then I, in between my 20s and 40s, I always considered myself a centrist, right? And I haven't changed one single view in my brain, not one. Not how I view the world, not how I look at the way people are living, not how I look at how government is trying to manage all of us. Not one view of mine has changed, and I am now a far left progressive. And I'm okay with that. But my question is, how did the nation move so far right that I now, instead of being a centrist who thought I was, you know, kind of common sense logical, now I'm a far left progressive.
It kind of goes back to what we were just talking about.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, you know, I don't believe you can be one-sided on every subject.
Right.
I just don't.
It's not healthy. It is. You're a drone. You're not a human.
I just don't think it's possible. Like, if you went down every single subject, you're telling me you're going to have a conservative value and or view for every single subject that we face. I just don't think it's... There's, like, for example, socially, I'm more liberal.
You were saying, yes.
Love who you want, do what you want, because who are we to define another individual's freedom?
Right.
If this is a country that says freedom, okay, what's the definition of that? What does that mean? There's nowhere in our Constitution that says this is what freedom means and this is what it looks like for everyone.
Right.
Everybody's idea of freedom is different, right? So the last thing we should do is dictate that, because then we're one of those. And then on the fiscally, I consider myself conservative. I'm not a tax and spend guy. Like, I don't want to tax the hell out of people to spend on a bunch of stuff, because what if the people don't want that, right? What if it's, you know, I mean, just because you can tax and spend doesn't mean you should, right? So
I think there needs to be a determination on what it's spent on.
We'll take our city, for example. We have a budget issue right now, right? And a tax increase is a possibility, or it was one of the possibilities. Well, typically what happens, and I'm not just saying this from a city point of view, I'm just saying in general, when you're going to do a tax increase, what does that usually lead to? Oh, well, we also need to pay for this. Oh, we also need to pay for that. Oh, we need to pay for this. So you start throwing a bunch of additional things to pay for.
It's like me being at the grocery store. I go for one thing, I walk out with nine, and that's exactly what he's talking about.
Right.
They want a specific, and they pile on.
Well, here's my view of no taxation without representation, right? I am not paying taxes for almost $1 trillion in our defense budget, which is more than 10 similar nations combined, okay? I am paying taxes. Somebody asked me this one time, too. What, do you think the government should do everything for us? And I said, I pay my taxes. I should have health care. I should have education. I should have housing. I should not have to worry about whether my kids are going to get fed. I pay taxes, right? It's their responsibility to make my life more livable, because that is what I'm paying them to do.
No civilization has ever reached a golden age under slavery.
No.
And that is the major thing we're doing. We have declared slavery as something as taxation without representation. And I have to be honest with this. If you're going to tax me for something that we really don't need, and our defense budget is insane. I'm going to be the crazy one here saying that that's a massive defense budget when we have friendly nations. If we keep them as friendly nations instead of going over there and saying, we're going to do this to you, we're going to give you, tariffs at 50%, and we're going to allow genocide to happen.
Well, don't get me wrong. As a vet, like, I'm all for defense. I'm all for our military. I'm all for protecting our country. But it's an interesting argument when you say, okay, we increase the defense budget to $1 trillion, but we cut Medicaid by $880 million, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's a little bit.
That's
like
a wealth
wait
transfer.
A second.
Well, let's be honest. Who are they going to use those soldiers against? They're too afraid to fight other nations.
Right.
What does that leave? The population.
Yeah.
I hate to be the crazy guy screaming like a
madman.
Oh,
they're not afraid to fight other nations. They just know that they'll get crucified by the public if they do.
Yeah,
part of the reason this guy got elected was no new wars, and he lost that when he started giving Israel the right to
and bombing Iran.
And I'm Iranian. Just making this known. I'm Iranian Muslim, so just so everyone, all the listeners know, like, I, you know.
Well, yeah, we also don't wear these things like badges and walk around.
Right, of course.
We want to be known as human beings that see the same problems you do.
Right.
So when you go and bomb a country, I mean, you kind of kibosh the whole anti-war thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Well, and that's what kills me too. Instead of the I don't call the Republican Party conservatives. I think they're anything but conservative right now.
The nationalists.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are seriously nationalists. Even so, that's why the arguments were so much easier in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, is because we had people who argued about how healthcare should be facilitated, how much support should colleges get to supplement their admissions.
It used to be free.
Right? At one time it was free, yes. Mm-hmm. And so what about Reaganomics is really going to make life difficult the future? Why should we manage somebody else's body? Those used to be the arguments, and we could, as logical human beings, debate them. My issue was always that the conservatives always stuck with 50-year-old arguments. They never, ever, ever saw the modern day dilemma in front of us. You're talking about things people were talked about 20 years ago.
It's the same.
Conservatism is pretty rooted in religion too, in Christianity. And,
it is,
right.
I wish they would follow what they preach.
Yeah, right. But that's a lot of the argument comes out of that. Like the argument for against abortion is a pure religious one.
It's not one about
what's best for the female, what's best for
it's
the fetus, what's
control.
Best for the right. It's the main reason is because it's against the religion, and now you got, you know, trying to get the Ten Commandments in classrooms in certain states, and you're like that there's a constitutional amendment for that, guys.
Yeah.
So
yeah. That's always what I go to.
It's the first, because you have to, and what I'm realizing now too is, and I'm sure everybody realizes this, is that nobody's reading anymore. Everybody's getting their news off 7-second video clips, right?
Yeah.
Like TikTok and all that. Like I have a family member that was like, oh, I saw a video on Instagram of a girl walking through a neighborhood, and she said, oh, because of all Trump's doing, like, there's no crime here. And I was like, how is the video going to show you there's no crime there?
That's not referenced.
Right. The person could be walking through a neighborhood on a bright Sunday afternoon. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It doesn't, like, how does that... And then we're talking about the legalities of deportations, you know, obviously the representation and having, you know, your right to go to court. It's crazy because so many people, like the person I was talking to, the family member, was like, well, I don't think that's a right afforded to non-citizens. And it's like, dude, read the Constitution.
Anybody on this land has the same rights.
If you read
whether
the
you're
sixth,
legal or
if
not.
If you look at the Sixth Amendment that talks about prosecutions, it doesn't even like identify individuals. It doesn't say every individual. It says all prosecutions, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't even delineate to that extent. But people need to read the Constitution. If you read the Constitution, you would see that the person in power right now has probably violated it a number of times.
Yeah, if it can't be put in a meme, a lot of individuals just kind of roll their eyes and walk away. But you know, they're the same ones who complain when laws are passed that go against them.
Yep.
And they're like, why? How did this happen? I'm like, I don't know. You could have read that 2-page report. Oh, but 2 pages?
Yeah.
Oh, you know.
Pages.
Or they bury it in
they could have read the 900-page report.
Big, beautiful bill.
Oh, God, yes.
1,000 pages that you have our elected representatives coming out and saying, well, I didn't read that part. I didn't read the whole thing. I don't agree with that.
To be honest, I only got like 250 pages in, and I'm like, you know what? I need somebody. I need an adult. Somebody come help me
with
this.
Right, but you know the difference? You're not paid through our taxpayer dollars to read it.
Exactly.
They are, and they're not, and they're voting for it.
We have a phone call, guys.
Oh.
Hello.
Hi. Can we get the Ten Commandments? Hi, Sherry. Can we get the Ten Commandments in state legislatures and Congress and Senate and Supreme Court? That's a joke.
I know. I knew he was going to
put it back in their face. Yeah. Okay,
oh, yeah.
Put it in schools. Well, then, why don't you put it right in front of your face? You can look at it every day also. I wanted to challenge this concept of America, the richest nation in the world. Mm-hmm. And I've always joked before, like, yeah, and we have the crappiest trains. Really? I mean, they're decrepit compared to France, anywhere, basically, Japan, any other. So, but now I'm just thinking, who has anybody actually done the numbers? I think Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, probably a lot less debt, a lot more assets, yes? Mm-hmm. More rich, I would think. Yes. Perhaps they're technically not a nation. They might be Emirates or what have you.
Yeah, the Qatar, yeah. The wealthiest, yeah. What's your name, by the way?
Tangent.
Oh, it's Tangent. Yeah,
Tangent, hey.
That earlier. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tangent, you're right. We could break it down to little pieces. The richest nation in the world? Sure, we have money. Good for us. But do we have happiness? No, that's the Scandinavian countries. You know that. Technology? That's Japan.
Yeah.
That's Korea. They have the best technology. Infrastructure. Qatar has more money in it by capita per people. We're talking about African nations and minerals. Yes, they're the richest nation underground. If you go to Canada, they have the happiest people with the highest amount of materials. Brazil has insane forests and supplies of raw materials and seaports that would rival the United States. But we're supposed to be the richest.
We've been getting it bargain basement CIA.
Excellent.
Military,
yes.
Induced prices.
You see the big picture, Tangent. I totally understand. You continue. I like people when they're intelligent. So please go.
Thank you. Let's see, great minds think alike, I heard it described at one point. I guess I'm just going with, well, it was so refreshing, Mr. Politician.
His name's Adam.
Adam, yeah.
That was really refreshing. But basically, I've done believing politicians' lies. I mean, they're not going to do what they say. They know what to say, what people want
to
hear.
They know what to say.
And then they don't have to do it.
Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily always believe that's true, Tangent.
I think people go into
Congress and into the state with the right intentions. The intentions that they run on are largely the policies that they want to enact when they get there. But if you've watched for any amount of decades, people going into city, state, and federal positions, they're in there, and for the first 3 months, they're all gung-ho. And then somebody grabs them and says, stop it. Things don't work that way here.
Any place of heavy authority or power, you better play our game.
Absolutely. Yeah, they go, do you want a free hot dog? Here, just don't say, don't talk about James. He's a nice guy. Here's a new...
So that's the root.
Yeah,
those are the people that we need to address our bias.
Yeah. But I'm like, hot dog. I'm hungry. That's my problem right now.
That's exactly what it is, actually, Tangent. Is because actually part of the reason I got into this was also as a social experiment, because I always wanted to know the same question you just had, is what happens to the politician when they go from the campaign trail to now in office? Like, what changes to now they're backtracking on so much of what they do? And in my experience, I haven't had to backtrack because, I'll stand my ground. But in my experience, sometimes it's because you realize you're outnumbered. Right, that there aren't as many people that you're serving with that may think like you.
Oh.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be a feeling of outnumbered. Sometimes there can be a feeling of isolation where you're like, okay, well, I'm the odd one out. And then when it comes time for that campaign, well, a lot of times what will happen is like, hey, if you don't toe the line, we'll replace you. Like, you're replaceable. Right? And that's kind of the problem. That's kind of the problem too. I mean, we saw it in past elections. You saw it in the last congressional election for CD5 when it was Jamie McLeod Skinner versus Lori Chavez de Remer. The DCCC, the Democratic National Committee, didn't help Jamie win because they were too progressive.
They crushed Bernie Sanders too.
Bernie Sanders. Like the one guy who actually made sense. of everything was Bernie Sanders, and look what they did to him. Yeah. Like, it's that too. Like, if you don't toe the line, we will replace you.
Yeah.
That's part of it too.
I think that's completely wrong. No. Especially when 100%. When they make mistakes.
Yeah.
Like rather large mistakes. Like with Bernie and there's some more locally.
Well, but we crucify each other when we make these, I'm going to say, the small mistakes we can say, that like the difference of opinions and different of ideas is something that literally is crucified when I say, well, I think this spending defense is insane. How dare you? You're not for our troops. I am. My wife was a veteran, okay? Mm-hmm. Adam's a veteran. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll just see.
And I spent 10 years supporting veterans.
And we're seeing the reality of what's going on. And I'm sorry that I have an opinion. I have eyes.
All of us have some relation to the military. I was a federal civilian contractor. Adam was a vet. And Remy's wife worked in the military. So, yeah. Definitely. Tangent, I got to let you go. We have another caller.
Thank you,
caller.
Tangent.
Sounds good. Thanks. Yes.
Thank you, Tangent. We have another caller. Hello.
Hello. Good morning. Good morning.
Morning.
Who is this?
Eckhard.
Hi.
Eckhard. Beckard.
B. Okay.
Oh, Beckard. What?
Anyway. Anyway, it's a great show. So many different topics to touch on, though. So I just want to kind of touch on a few that I'm going to respectfully disagree.
Excellent.
First one, I mean, is you mentioned abortion, and you know, as a conservative, yes, it is a conservative, or you could call it a Christian issue, but I think it's more of a life versus death issue. You know, I believe that. When you tear a baby out of a mother's womb, you're murdering it. You're, you know, killing it. And so that's the standpoint I'm coming from. Not a point of, you know, whether it's Christian or not. I just think murder is murder, and you know, whether you murder it in the womb or out of the womb. So that's my point of view on abortion. You know, as far as where our country going, I think our country is going in the right direction. And right now it doesn't seem like it, but I think as time plays out, we're going to see some great changes in our country. We're going to see, you know, the fraud that's been so prevalent in D.C. being exposed, like, you know, USAID and,
well,
and the IRS
and
other issues where we've seen just trillions of dollars laundered by our politicians. And I think we're going to see when all this is exposed is, as Julian Assange has said, 98% of all governments around the world will fall or disappear or be put in handcuffs for the treasonous activities and acts they've committed.
Okay, so I am going to actually address your first point. Are you willing to, one, adopt the baby that the mother was not planning to have? Two, are you willing to feed the children from parents who are unwilling to or don't have capacity to take care of? Or what about the woman who is about ready to pass away because there's a dead fetus inside of her? Are you willing to be the one to stop the government of Texas from putting that doctor in jail? Are you going to advocate for policies for family planning, for feeding poor children, for aftercare for the mother and the baby, or any complications that that child might have before it may pass away because the complications that it had in the womb are still persistent?
So you know, those are kind of straw, you know, examples. They don't happen a lot. You know, very, very, very.
Three women have died in the past year because of sepsis, you know, from not being able to access abortion.
It's like saying, let's kill all the homeless people because we can't more house them. Okay, that's not an excuse to murder that baby who we now have technology through ultrasound. It's a living, breathing child that feels
after 16 weeks.
Mm-hmm. You know what? It is a technology is showing us that even in the first week, there's a beating heart.
No, there isn't. It's called a zygote. It's called a zygote. It is a cell. There isn't a beating heart until maybe the 16th week, if I'm correct. Adam has something to say.
Please.
It has a soul that God has put into it from the time.
I'm going to mute you.
Let us have our say. Let you have yours.
I appreciate you calling in, and this is what we need to have more discussions like this.
Absolutely.
Right? Because we've been talking to our own like-minded people for so long that now this is why discourse is where it's at.
Oh, it is.
This is why we have this is good. My only thing, and I respect everybody's individual opinion. You have a right to have your own opinion, but facts are facts, right? My question is, okay, so if we're going to do this, if we're going to say, like, okay, we don't want to murder these children, we want these babies to be born, we want to bring them in, they have a heartbeat, they have this and they have that, okay, so then why in America are we cutting the same programs that are supposed to help support these children, these families? We're cutting their health insurance, we're cutting education benefits. There's no free lunches. If we're talking about taking care of children, you can't just give birth and then the kids here.
Mm-hmm.
You got to take care of that child too.
Yeah.
And if you're going to force people to give birth and have children, then you better have the basic necessities available to help raise and support that child if you're going to force a family to bring a child into this world.
Adam, thank you. We are running out of time. I want to thank the caller for letting us hear his perspective, whether we agree or not. You guys, when is the podcast starting? Do we know?
As soon as we can find time to sit in the same room and yell at each other.
Ty is my engineer. I want to thank both of these guys, Adam and Remy, for the Missing Middle podcast coming. You will hear more about them. Enjoy your day.
Thank you.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Melissa Lesniak, the creator and host of That Vegan Show. On That Vegan Show, you will hear in-depth guest interviews on vegan-related topics, such as companion animals, environmentalism, social issues,